Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. This episode is sponsored by LifeLoop. On today's episode, I spoke with LifeLoop CEO Rob Fisher. The Greenwood Village, Colorado-based software company works to improve resident engagement and streamline staff workflows. Fisher sees opportunities for growth of the platform in 2025, supported by developments in artificial intelligence, while also rolling out a new program to improve employee training. This comes as the senior living industry continues to shift toward a value-based care future, and with the opportunity to improve resident health and wellness.
What senior living actually has an opportunity to do is to partner and take part in the value-based care models, which will introduce potentially some new revenue streams for operators.
Now, here's my interview with LifeLoop CEO, Rob Fisher. Rob, thanks so much for joining us here. We're really excited to discuss LifeLoop and learn more about your organization and all the great things that LifeLoop can offer senior living operators and beyond. We know there's a lot to talk about in the value-based care space, and so we're really excited to have you on today.
Thanks for having me, Austin, and equally excited on this side just to talk about some of the key topics in senior living.
Definitely. And I know you just recently did a Voices column with us, so we're really excited about that. And you had described value-based care as essentially boiling down to quality outcomes that ultimately move away from pay for volume and instead pay for value. And I think this perspective is really important and kind of encapsulates this shift to value-based care that we're seeing in senior living right now. Would you be able to expand on what this means for senior living and what that shift looks like? Because I feel like LifeLoop is central into this shift.
Yeah, so happy to do that. And I'll give a little background first, just because I think it's imperative to my response even. So I spent the previous to this last year with LifeLoop, I spent the previous 20 years in digital healthcare, both running a SaaS business, so very, very much know the ins and outs of software as a service, but then also spent about 8 years in value-based care itself. And it was through a transaction with an organization that was a services-based organization. And so when you think about value-based care, and in senior living, it's somewhat of a newer concept, but value-based care has been around really since about 2010 and even before then. But there was an act that was put in place that really pushed the model and the different models, about 40 different variations of value-based care models, intending to pay for value over pay for volume. And really what that means is that you're looking to provide wellness activities, and engaging activities to individuals to keep them safe, keep them at home, keep them healthy. We can talk about the seven dimensions of wellness. And within all of those, they each play a particular part in keeping a resident healthy. A lot of times we just think about the physical health of an individual, but that's just one component of it. So again, value-based care is really intended to help support the individuals in individualized healthcare experience.
And before we get too far into our conversation today, I think it's important to also talk about LifeLoop in general. So would you be able to familiarize our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with LifeLoop, what the company can offer in terms of the various services? I know there's so many different areas that you interact with the continuum, so would love to highlight what LifeLoop has to offer.
Yeah, happy to do so. And the quick backdrop on that, 25-year-old business that was couple of organizations that have come together over the years. We are hyper-focused on providing efficiency tools for staff, engaging activities for residents, and also connecting families. We serve about 5,000 communities and roughly 500,000 residents in all aspects. So we will continue to stay focused in providing the greatest resident experience possible, and really using all three of those entities as our focal point.
Wonderful. Thank you. And you just touched on your experience a little bit ago, and I think it's important to talk about here. I'm very certain that your 20 years of digital healthcare and now just over about a year with LifeLoop, you're really starting to see some parallels and opportunities going forward. How does your perspective and all this experience, how does that play out for a technology company like LifeLoop?
Well, the time in which I joined healthcare, which you think about it, early 2000s, healthcare was really delayed in the adoption of technology, as we know, senior living even more so. So I joined at an interesting time where it was more of a nice to have. And then through legislation, in about 2009, we started to see that with the HITRUST Act, the push and drive towards adoption of EHRs. That really unlocked the momentum in healthcare. We may not see the exact legislation driven in senior living, but we are seeing momentum. And with that momentum, I would fully expect to see greater and greater adoption of technology within senior living. So that's a very easy parallel to make. I think that, again, what I saw in healthcare and the concept of value-based care and the adoption of these models, the same is going to hold true in senior living, where it's not a question of, is value-based care going to be adopted? Value-based care is not dependent on senior living. What senior living actually has an opportunity to do is to partner and take part in the value-based care models, which will introduce potentially some new revenue streams for operators. So in a world, in a future world, you could easily see kind of the hospitality model of owner and operator, but you're gonna see a third leg to that stool, which will likely be a provider partner to support the care for individuals in senior living, ultimately leading more to a hospitality-driven healthcare model. And I think that what we'll see is operators, again, partnering with those provider groups, and this happens today, you're going to see opportunities for new revenue streams that affords these operators to do new things, to drive and purchase new technology, and a little bit of a snowball effect when it comes to that, because once they're starting to do that, they're going to see their satisfaction ratings go up with their residents. You're going to see your health increase with your residents, which all of this improves length of stay and ultimately maintains high occupancy rates. So it's going to be a really interesting time to see the maturation of technology in the senior living space, similar to what I saw in healthcare.
And I think it's only going to be accelerated by things like artificial intelligence and incorporating those elements into the healthcare landscape as well. So I know that's also part of our conversation, and I'm excited to get to those points as well. And you just touched on some of the benefits within the value-based care kind of movement. But I want to also touch on some of the challenges. What are some of the barriers to wide value-based care adoption in senior living today?
So I would say that it's not a matter of value-based care adoption, because value-based care is a model that's and it's somewhat of a fiscal model that's going to be driven. And in fact, it's roughly about 75% of Medicare beneficiaries are already in a value-based care model today. So we only have about a 25% left to get to what CMS's goal is, which is to have 100% of Medicare beneficiaries in a value-based care model by 2030. So at times I hear people say, hey, value-based care in senior living is, it's not a thing for another 5 years. I mean, the fact of the matter is residents are either, 75% of residents are likely already in a Medicare Advantage plan, or they're in a traditional ACO, an accountable care organization. Those are the primary models out of the 40 that I mentioned earlier. Those are the two primary models that have really taken hold. There are definitely nuanced models. I think that you've probably heard of the GUIDE program that is intended to service those living with dementia. So that is very much more of a disease state type program, which is, again, another variation of value-based care. And that's very early days. But the vast majority are going to be either in a Medicare Advantage or a ACO model. So it's, again, it's not about the adoption, but it is about participation with senior living operators. So the question is, what are going to be the challenges around senior living operators participating in these value-based care programs? And I think that I think going back to the three legs of the stool, that the challenge is finding the right partners on the provider side to build relationship with, to influence the way that care is provided in the community. And ultimately, it then becomes a question of what is the financial arrangement between these organizations as well. So that's going to be one challenge, I think, that folks are going to are going to see. But that is one that it can be overcome over time, for sure. I think the other challenge is whether senior living communities and operators recognize it today or not, they are already providing benefit to Medicare beneficiaries that somebody else holds the financial risk of that individual. So I happened to be at, I started middle of April last year, went to Argentum early May, and went to a value-based care session, and somebody stood up on stage and stated, the moment a resident moves into a Medicare Advantage plan, the Medicare Advantage plan creates significant margin because they have the care, for example, in an assisted living facility or community rather, they have the care and the oversight that's actually happening, which is intended to be that proactive model of care, that proactive wellness that is necessary to keep residents at home, keep them healthy, and to reduce admissions into a hospital, not at all costs, because there's sometimes they are absolutely necessary. But when you introduce a value-based care model, you're going to see a different level of triaging that occurs at a senior living community to ensure, hey, is this the most appropriate place to take care of this individual? Or can we do it here? Is there home health that could come in and service? So there are different models that will come into play.
And I think you touched on an interesting point there in that senior living operators are thinking more about the types of care that they provide. And also, I've been hearing from operators in the last 18 months that have put more emphasis on detailing what their levels of care look like and making sure that they have so many different levels of care that can capture where someone might fall if they're coming into, especially if they're thinking about these value-based care relationships and thinking about Medicare Advantage and moving in that direction. I think there's more thought going on to what that looks like. And with that comes, I think, more nuanced and greater care for what operators are really trying to deliver to residents. And you would touched on, I want to stay with discussing value-based care for a moment before we move in talking about AI. I want to get your thoughts on how LifeLoop can help senior living operators track and maybe improve upon the key metrics that really help demonstrate the value of a value-based care model, and if LifeLoop can play any significant part in tracking and improving key metrics that really are part of this care journey to demonstrate the viability of a value-based care model.
Yeah, so A lot of the outcomes-based measures for value-based care are relative to quality of care, but also satisfaction of care. So certainly through our technology and some survey capabilities, we're able to satisfy some of the satisfaction elements. I think what has been challenging in the past is that there is no in operations or an operator, there is no financial line item, revenue line item to activities, for example. And we spend a lot of time in that space. And the realm of engagement and activities supports, in some cases, upwards of six of the seven dimensions of wellness. And so we put a lot of emphasis into the tools, creating engaging activities, engaging content in six of those elements. And yet you don't charge for that to a resident. That's part of what an operator is offering. Our strong belief is that in a value-based care partnership, that the way to be paid, so to speak, for those is going to be through better health. And through that better health is going to create greater bonus opportunities. So the concept of a shared savings program, that what happens is Medicare, for every beneficiary, and the average beneficiary, Medicare beneficiary, costs somewhere between, I think it's $16,000 to $17,000 a year. What CMS is intending to do, or Medicare is intending to do, is to say, I want somebody else to go manage that and to manage it proactively. If you are able to save $2,000, $4,000, $6,000, whatever it might be, for that individual beneficiary, then we will split that with you. And then what operators have the opportunity to do is then split the half of the provider's portion with themselves. So that's where we believe that a lot of our capabilities, which we've been doing for 25 years, and we're going to continue to invest in this area. This is where a lot of the outcomes are going to come into play from a healthcare standpoint.
That's really interesting, and I think you're totally right in getting to discuss that long-term benefit, and that's where the financial outcomes really see some traction there.
Yeah, because Austin, like we talk, you know, you talk about the care, the different levels of care that these operators are actually creating now. That's a revenue stream that they've created for themselves. Culinary or dining, that's a revenue stream from a point of sale standpoint. I mean, you could name it, and the vast majority has its own line item, so to speak. And it's the world of engagement, activities, community, what the culture of the community and being able to actually bring people together that helps to support, you know, one, two, three, or four of the seven dimensions of wellness. And that's what keeps people, you know, upright. That's what keeps people mobile. That's what keeps people engaged. And they fall into isolation, depression, things of that nature, and they're susceptible to maybe a fall. They're susceptible to, you know, whatever the body might be carrying, and you know, a weakened demeanor even. So we believe strongly that, you know, we, especially in these congregate settings, we have an opportunity to bring people together that are, you know, like-minded, and iron sharpens iron in that situation, and that they can actually see, you know, a better life ahead of them versus the alternative.
Definitely. And now in the second half of our conversation, I think we should spend some time talking about AI innovation in senior living, because I know LifeLoop is uniquely positioned to be able to understand and interact with AI tools, and also, I think, better portray them and help them be more efficiently by senior living operators. So I'd love to get your thoughts. Why do you think that artificial intelligence is suddenly having its moment in senior living? I think it's been on the for some time now, but it's interesting to see more and more operators start to think about it from things like marketing, and also now in things like care delivery. So it's, I think, really become part of the senior living operating playbook to think about some sort of AI tool. So why do you think now is the time, and why is AI having its moment today?
Well, I think AI is having its moment everywhere. Anywhere and everywhere we look, AI is, it's not just a buzzword, it's a reality. So I think that, you know, while senior living has been a little slow to adopt technology, that has started to pick up. And in most cases, technology providers such as ourselves, we're investing heavily into AI, and therefore, there's no other option but for somebody to start to adopt AI. We're going so far as to we're rolling out a program for our entire employee base to baseline everybody from an educational standpoint, from a tool standpoint, and bring them through what will end up being somewhere between a 3 and 6 month training regimen to make sure that we are all staying abreast and staying on the same page as far as what capabilities exist. When we can do that, we're going to become more efficient as a business ourselves, similar to a senior living community or operators. But we're also going to be able to influence and create even greater tools through AI enabled capabilities, which is what we started to kick off back in October of 24 when we launched our first AI enabled activity curator, which will go with our calendar management as well. So it's going to be, in part, I think it's us vendors that are, or partners that are starting to help to push and drive some of the AI into the senior living communities. One thing that we really try to touch on and differentiate is to ensure that, you know, AI has been known to be this disruptor, and we are not a believer of that. We actually are a strong believer that it's a connector. It is, in what we're seeing in our own tool set for operators, it is bringing together different features or functions within our platform in a new way that is just incredibly seamless, all the way from onboarding and being able to, you could consider it actively, but somewhat passively recording an interview when bringing a new resident on, and being able to take all of that that data and apply it to a personalized profile for an individual so that we know what their preferences are just through listening into this interview. We can then use that as a basis to build AI calendars, so basically suggested materials for our users that promote a calendar of what is the identity of this community and how do we serve the identity of this community appropriately, and what are the activities and or engagement materials that are necessary to do that. We can do it from a community level, but we can also do it from a personalized standpoint for an individual or for individual resident as well. Offer up suggestions based off of the data that we have. And then because we have curated content of over 6,700 pieces of content through IN2L, which many people are familiar with, we can actually surface the most critical opportunities to the senior living users, the staff themselves, to then provide the activities that are desired and are going to be most beneficial from, again, the seven dimensions of wellness.
And I think it also, your point on connectivity also gets to something that I've thought about some of these AI tools and the ways that operators are using them, specifically within senior living, is that they're bringing more efficiency to an operator's staff and being able to, one, make decisions more quickly, but also have data that is, I think, more digestible and having some answers to things that you might have to maybe, say, take a few hours out of a care person's day to really make these connections and find these broader insights to, one, not only improve health, but also around lifestyle and vitality. We know that that's vitally important outside of the care that many operators provide. And I want to ask about your position. I think LifeLoop is in a unique spot to be able to talk about this because you interact with AI tools, you're helping roll those out, but you're also communicating the benefits to senior living operators. But are there any misconceptions that you find yourself, or common conversations that you have yourself having with operators about AI? And how do you address concerns that operators might have in incorporating things like AI tools into their operating model? How do you address those concerns? What are some of the things you find yourself talking about the most?
Yeah, so I want to just follow up on one other thing, and I'll answer that question. But you mentioned just the efficiencies that are created through AI, and that is exactly what we heard from one of our customers that was running a pilot with the initial capability that we created. And they let us know that they were saving 8 hours a week. 8 hours a week, that's an entire day just by being able to leverage this AI capability. I mean, the power is like enormous, and we're just scratching the surface of it. So we believe strongly that, and this in part goes to your question, that I think with AI, a lot of people have been fearful of it because of myriad of reasons. In some cases, people I think are just scared with, they don't know what they don't know, and therefore jumping into it, are they going to stumble over something that, are they going to share information that they shouldn't with AI? And there are some serious concerns with that, where private entities are putting into a public domain some content which AI can digest and you know, regurgitate to somebody else later. So I think that there are some security, privacy related concerns. And this is all part of our own governing process as well, which we believe that a lot of this is going to end up being part of the contract, is just like your typical HIPAA security and privacy related verbiage and contracts. We're going to see something similar, I think, to AI, and we are hyper prepared for that. So I think there's a part of that. I think from a user standpoint, you know, we've heard many people say that they're fearful of AI replacing their or replacing them as individuals. Our strong message is that AI is not going to replace you, but somebody that understands AI may replace you if you don't jump on board. And there's significant truth to that, because most people are going to hire the most efficient person possible, right? What we end up doing, though, is we free them up so that they can use their time more appropriately. This is a very hospitality-driven business, which really can be considered a relationship-driven business. And relationships don't happen through computers. Relationships happen with people. And so what we're affording them through creating these efficiencies is more time to be with residents and more time to build connection and relationship with those residents, so that they can focus on, again, wellness, ultimately going back to the value-based care mantra. They can focus on those items and continue to see their scores with residents and family members you know, go through the roof because of they're doing all the right things.
Most definitely. And before we sign off here, I know we've got about 4 minutes left in our conversation. I want to move back to the value-based care conversation a little bit, and just getting back to some of those points you had made about overcoming the barriers of value-based care adoption. Would love to know, from LifeLoop's perspective, how can the platform of LifeLoop help bridge the gaps between healthcare providers and senior living operators to really improve care coordination? Because I think care coordination is something we're hearing more about in the industry as it relates to value-based care, and more broadly in general about the need for efficient care delivery and care coordination. So we'd love to get your perspective on how you think LifeLoop can really help bridge those gaps.
So I think that we're one of many players that are needed to bridge that gap. And we have strong relationships with other entities that are, you know, maybe not necessarily within our domain expertise, whether you're talking about EHR providers or otherwise. And it's going to take a combination of a number of us to come together and support one another for the greater good. The way that we see opportunities exist is that there's clinical information that will be in the EHR, for example, that will register as Rob Fisher is clinically depressed. Okay, well, what does that mean? Should we throw pills at him, or is there an opportunity to actually prescribe engagement, if you will, and what does that look like? So we need to build workflows through integrations. And in my short stay here in senior living, integrations are a need. And because there's no standard in senior living, whereas there are standards that were built in healthcare, it seems to be quite the challenge. So we're really starting to hit that one pretty hard. And that's going to be required in order for us to partner with entities to service up that information. So you're talking about a provider who's within an EHR that's registering an event. sharing information. And again, through our capabilities, we believe that an order more or less could be placed, and then we build workflows to support and go, quote unquote, treat or support in the treatment of a resident. So that's just, that's one example in which we believe that we can play a role there. You know, I've had the benefit of early on having conversations with what I believe to be some of the folks that are really driving the value-based care message in senior living. So Andy Eby of Bickford and SLTC, have had conversations with them, and this higher path concept. And when you listen to it and you hear it, it's a little bit like, why has it taken us so long to move in that direction? And a lot of it is, you go back to the time in which assisted living communities were created, and the whole concept was to drive away from healthcare. It was to allow to focus on somebody living, quite frankly, what could be their you know, last few months, last few days, whatever it might be. And so the emphasis was not about go fix them with healthcare. It was about, you know, helping to support them live. Well, things have changed, things have evolved, and we are in this point where we're seeing this convergence of healthcare coming back into the state. And it, truthfully, it never really left, but it is this hospitality-driven healthcare that's coming back into senior living. And the again, the opportunity for operators is significant. If I had any advice to them, I'd say jump in, ask the questions, have the conversations, go to events that are speaking to value-based care. I think the thing that I can do, just given my background that many others in the senior living space don't have, I can speak in terms of, this is not a matter of, is value-based care happening? It's been happening. It's a matter of, how do you get involved? Because if you don't get involved, it's going to happen at your communities anyway. It's just going to happen with a third party or an outside party provider coming in and seeing their people or their patients at their own home. And that is a little bit of the old way that healthcare was done, was door to door almost. And it's coming back to that. And that's so that they can stay proactive. Remote monitoring, things of that nature are going to also play a part, but it is going back to care for the individual at home or in their own place if you can.
And definitely, I think that long journey, I think it's all about momentum, and it seems like the momentum is building, if you will, for value-based care adoption in senior living. And I just want to say, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Transform. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Last word for 2025, anything you can share about LifeLoop's journey ahead? Would love to know any highlights we can be on the lookout for.
So we just came back from almost a week long offsite for our entire employee base. Incredibly enthusiastic event, a lot of energy coming out of it. We had a really great year in 24, expecting really big things in 25, huge impact to the market. Things to come are AI. A lot of new capabilities that we're rolling out that are going to further support our communities and the residents and the families. So we've got a lot coming in the first half of this year. And then we are, you know, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about value-based care as a whole and seeing the opportunity to actually support it within senior living. So we will continue to dig deeper there and working with partners to figure this out together. It's not one entity that's going to solve for this in senior living. It's going to take a number of us. And so I've already seen a handful of other partners out there that are, you know, raising their hand and saying, hey, let's go together and figure this out. So there's more to come on that front for sure.
Wonderful. We'll be watching along for sure. Well, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time, and really appreciate you joining us here on Transform.
Austin, thank you so much for having us, and we look forward to the next time.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.